Just as a reminder for those who, all of the, I do a class summary at the end of, on Monday or Sunday night, and send that out to everybody. So if you are not on our email list and want to be, just get me your email and I'll make sure you get on that list. And also the class recordings are posted on the Christ in Training website. So if you ever want to listen to something again, if it didn't bore you to death the first time, it might bore you to death the second time, please feel free to tap into that. And there are some other things on that Christ in Training website too. Some of Paul Selig's earlier works, class summaries, as well as recordings of those, and some other stuff too if you're interested in that. So that's always available. Let's just take a minute as we put our light and our energies together in truth. To notice what it would be like if the words came to you, remember who you are. To become aware of where that question takes you. And we say together unity's prayer of light. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. Power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is. And all is well. See, I think we got all the way to page 157 last, does that sound right?
Yes.
Congratulations, you're halfway there.
Yeah, right.
Middle of the page.
We actually moved on to another chapter, okay. As we get into that, I'd like to share something with you that came to my mind as we were reading over this section. This is a fairly new, different translation of the New Testament, John's Gospel. I have loved you just as the Father has loved me. You must go on living in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will live in my love just as I have kept my Father's commandments and live in his love. Obviously, those are not the Ten Commandments we're talking about, but the Great Commandment. Love the Lord thy God with thy whole heart, with thy whole soul, with thy whole mind, with thy whole strength, and thy neighbor as thyself. Because you can't do anything. They're both the same thing. I have told you this so that you can share my joy, and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love each other as I have loved you. There is no greater love than this, than a man should lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I tell you to do. I shall not call you servants any longer, for a servant does not share his master's confidence. No, I call you friends now because I have told you everything that I have heard from the Father. It is not that you have chosen me, but it is I who have chosen you. I have appointed you to go and bear fruit that will be lasting, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he will give it to you. So the chapter is called Demonstration in Love. By the way, we always have kind of a little class before the class. You know, we kind of toss some things back and forth, kind of a little bit of a warm-up. one of our classmates was pointing out to me one of these paragraphs here on page 157 that this kind of crops up every once in a while, that there's a paragraph that's going to sort of jump out and is going to, in some ways, for you at this moment, it might be different the next moment, but for you at this moment, is going to sort of summarize the whole learning. You're going to say, oh, that's it. It's right there in a couple of sentences. So I'm going to begin on the beginning of page 157, and then I'll share that paragraph with you in a moment. Now, the responsibility each of you hold is to realize once and for all that love is not a personality construct, nor is it special to be handed to the special. It is the action of the Creator working as and through you in his own dominion, honoring all that he sees before him as a creation worthy of love. In a line that came a little bit before that, it says, you are love incarnate, love as you, and the responsibility that you hold as the lover to all that you see before you. I don't know about you, but it's really easy to forget that. Even if you don't watch the news, you're bound to be influenced by some of the stuff that's flying around here. The anger, the fear, the separation, the sometimes literally the hatred. That is kind of like, it's kind of like flypaper. One of my favorite images is from Joel Chandler Harris' Uncle Remus. When he talks about the tar baby that Brer Rabbit invented, sort of as a ventriloquist. And the tar baby was obviously a baby, you know, looks like a little baby made out of tar, right? Starts talking to Brer Bear and Brer Fox and starts insulting them. And so the first thing one of them wants to do is to punch the tar baby in the face, which does, and of course his fist gets caught. And gets really annoyed at that, and so I want to get my fist out, so I put my foot up to push against it to see if I can get my fist out. And now my fist and my foot is caught. It's kind of like a Monty Python movie, okay? And then, of course, so eventually what happens is the more I push, the more angry I get to push against someone else's anger, the more entrapped I become, and the more entrenched I become in that. And this is what we are dealing with in one way. We are dealing with the cult of the personality. And what we are being asked to do is, first of all, don't get so wrapped up in thinking that you are the personality that you created, because you created this. You know, I'm very pleased with the persona that I've created this lifetime. I think I've done a really decent job, okay? I've got everybody fooled. You know, you think, and for a while anyway, in my life and probably in yours, I got to thinking that this is who I, ta-da, this is who I am. I was saying, no, this is a really nice suit of clothes that you either went out and bought or you picked up someplace. And there's nothing wrong with the suit of clothes you have, but it's not who you are. Oh, well, who am I then? God is love, and he who abides in love abides in God, and God in him. It's not a personality construct. Now, the only thing that gets me angry at your personality is my personality. The only reason why I think there's something wrong with your personality is because I'm looking at it through the lens of my personality. Now, if I were to look at it through the lens of my divine self, the truth of who I am, through the eyes of love, I would say, oh, pretty painful suit you picked for yourself. Glad it's not mine. Hope you get a better one next time around. But I'm having enough time disidentifying with the personality that I created for myself than trying to make you disidentify with yours. But I can accept you as being the truth of who you are. And here's where the kind of where this work becomes so essential, I think, is instead of saying, well, you need to see the Christ in that person. And so I'm pretty good at mouthing, I see the Christ in you. Oh, really? I mean, I say the words, but do I really mean that? And I say, well, I really do and I really don't, because I really can't see the Christ in you. You know, what I see in you is blah, 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 blah. Let me count the ways. But what this work does is it says, okay, stop all that. Stop all the trying to be what you are not. And open yourself up to the possibility that I can see the Christ in myself. I look in the mirror and what do I see? I see, it's like when I flipped on my iPad one time, I flipped on the camera by mistake. And there was a little old man looking back at me, okay? And I said, what happened here? Something wrong with this picture. I was going, oh, that's me. I said, well, is that who I am? And that, but what I said, see, because I'm so damn self-conscious, I said, is that what other people see? I didn't say, is that real? I said, if that's what they see, then I really am an old man. And then, of course, what difference does that make? Is that real? I am opening myself up to the possibility of, yes, seeing the Christ in you, or the divine in you, but also seeing the divine in me. Now, once I do that, it's kind of like I push myself up to that point. I push myself up to that place of living in the possibility that I can see the Christ in you. Maybe I can't yet. Maybe I can't perceive myself as doing that yet. But I open myself up to that possibility. And when I do that, that's the conscious work that I am doing here. When I do that, then what happens is that love or that divine self within me sort of takes a deep breath and sort of opens up like a flower opens up. Like, oh. And I'm in that place, maybe just for a split second, I'm in that place of no thought. I'm in that place of awareness, of knowing. Again, that image I go back to periodically of Thomas Merton in downtown Louisville, seeing everybody for a moment or so as being beings of light. Okay? Now, I didn't stop and say to him, well, I can't really be seeing this, I must be hallucinating. Somebody must have put some acid in my coffee, all right, or whatever. Ah, I just sat with that, knowing that probably in 30 seconds or a minute or so, it will probably disappear. It will disappear from my consciousness for a while, but here it is for now. Thank you. And so what we are being asked to do here is, if we're willing to, willingness and intention, those two things again, willingness, intention, and opening myself up to the possibility. Now, there's lots of ways we can explore that possibility. Opening myself up to the possibility that I can be loved unconditionally. Not my personality self. Not the me that I think I am, not the me that I think I see, but the truth of who I am. Can I be loved unconditionally? Because I'm connected to unconditional love. I wouldn't be here unless I was. I would have cashed out a long time ago. On drugs or alcohol or something else. Unless there was a part of me that knew, that was connected to that unconditional love, maybe just by a tiny golden thread. Still there. So the work that we are doing here, or at least an aspect of the work we are doing here, is continually opening ourselves up to the possibility. And that's the work, that's part of the work that the personality self is doing. It's opening itself up to the possibility that I am more than what I think I am. Well, I like to say the good news is you're not who you think you are. You are more than what you think you are. This is not a personality construct, nor is it special. With the church lady in Saturday, isn't that special? Or as the Course in Miracles talks about, special relationships. I know I've related this before, but it might deserve relating again because I was with our grandkids over the last week or so. It was right around the same time that my first granddaughter was born that I came across this thing from the Course in Miracles said that said there's no such thing as special relationships. Or if you think you have a special relationship, that's an illusion. And I thought that was a lot of malarkey. That's not what I said, but I thought it was, I didn't think that was true at all, because I had, the day before I had come across that quotation, I was carrying my granddaughter around in this freezing weather in downtown Chicago, and she was in one of those little kids' sleeping bags, you know, and she was, I could feel her energy just kind of going right into my heart, and I could feel mine going into hers, and people would say, do you want me to carry? No, I don't want you to carry her. And I said, well, that's a special relationship. So my relationship to Margot, nobody treats me as lovingly as Margot does. I recognize the impossibility of that sometimes. Can't you be mad at me? What's the matter with you? All right, so I get into this, and then I stop for a minute and I say, well, that's a special relationship. And fortunately, there was an openness about me at that particular time in my life where I could listen to, these are the best words I have for this, I could listen to my inner voice. That doesn't mean I was hearing voices. We've all done this before in some way or another, is that your heart has spoken to you. And the way you understand how it has spoken to you is it translates itself somehow into words that you understand. That's the best I can explain to it. And my heart spoke to me at that particular moment and said to me, Jerry, do you recognize how you love Margot and how you love your granddaughter? And I said, yes. And it said, well, that's how you're being asked to love everybody. I went, oh. That moment, anyway, it made perfect sense. The only reason to have a special relationship is to realize that that's the way you're supposed to love everybody. And of course, once you realize that, there's no relationship that's special because they're all the same. So I would be rather remiss in not saying anything about the passing of my, I call him my friend. Only met him twice in the physical world, but my friend and teacher, Ram Dass, who was 88 years old and passed a few days ago. And it was not unexpected. He had been suffering the trauma from a very severe stroke for a number of years. And you could almost see him, if you looked at him with his body, you could almost see him letting go of that. And saying to him, well, I'm almost there. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm almost there. And I recall this story he told about his guru, Neem Karoli Baba, when his guru passed, made his transition. And his people would be renting their garments and throwing ashes on their head and wailing and screaming and saying, oh, what are we going to do? He's gone. And Ram Dass very calmly looked at his friends and fellow workers and teachers and said, where did he go? He didn't go anyplace, just doesn't have a body anymore. He's still the same loving universal spirit that he always was, he just doesn't have a body anymore. And so when I heard the news, the first thought that came in my mind was, where did he go? It's like we didn't go anyplace. And so, I will continue to have Ram Dass stories probably for every example that I pull up out of my hat someplace or another.
I hadn't seen it in the news.
Pardon me?
I haven't seen it in the news.
It probably is not terribly newsworthy compared to all of the other crap that's going on right now. Okay. I mean, who cares, you know? I care more about, somebody being impeached or somebody being called as a witness or somebody being called a liar or whatever else we're doing with one another right now. And in a way, that's kind of a marvelous example of where we are as a nation, as a personality of a nation, of what's important. The passing of a loving man who has done so much for so many people, not only in this country, and for so many people who were kind of part of the, not only the boomer generation, but a little bit before that, which I am part of the kind of the hippie generation before that, have touched so many lives in so many different ways. Not just as an ideal, but as a practice. So you will not hear an end to Ram Dass stories, okay? They will continue, just as we will continue for a while. Now what is not, here's the paragraph. Now what is not worthy of love? If you ask yourself this, what is not worthy of love, you will discover very quickly the things that you put outside of God. Oh, I don't put anything outside of God. Well, yes, you do. So do I. I'm on the bus going to enlightenment. And guess who comes along and sits right next to me? Well, I don't want you to be here. That's Margot's seat. That's special. In one of his books, I think it's the one after this one, the first book in the second trilogy, the guides take Paul into a sort of a guided imagery and say, imagine, Paul, that you're in a cave. And in this cave, if you choose to be in this cave along with us, you have to invite the person who rubs you the wrong way the most, the one you can't stand. The one you can't even stand to look at, much less listen to. And you have to invite him in the cave with yourself. Now you might have a real struggle here, because what you're going to notice is that you're so identified with your personality self that you're making them so identified with theirs. That's all you see, that's all you experience. And you sit there with this being. I'm making part of this up. But you sit there with him. Of course, I'm making most of it up anyway. You sit there with this being until you are able to see through the mask they are wearing. And of course, in order to be able to do that, you have to see beyond the mask you are wearing. Only then can you grab that person's hand and walk out of the cave together. If it's true that we are all walking one another home, which is a famous Ram Dass statement, then you don't get to choose which personality you get to hold hands with, because we're all walking one another home. Not as personalities. The personality will be shed just like the body will be shed, just like the ego consciousness will be shed, will be let go of. Unless you're holding on to it really tightly. And of course, if you're holding on to it really tightly as a point of identification, you will take it with you. You can take it with you. But at the moment of transition, or the moments of transition, I believe we have a choice of identifying with that little limited self, that personality self that maybe we have spent years creating and saying, I realize that's not who I am. let that energy go, let it be recycled for some other purpose, for some other reason. But if you want it, it's still there. You can take it with you if you want to. And you know what's going to happen? You're going to take it with you into the next incarnation. Won't that be fun? And then occasionally I'm going to wake up and say, damn it, what did I take that one with me for? Well, because I didn't learn yet that that wasn't who I am. Well, I'm kind of on an esoteric roll here. I better not get into that too deeply. It's kind of a little bit scary. And what you put outside of God, you give great power to. Get that. What you put outside of God, you give great power to. Why is that? Because instead of loving it, I am loading it up with fear. I am loading it up with anger. I am loading it up with separation. And the more I do that, the more power it gets. Because when I notice that I'm looking at you as being separate, as being angry, as being fearful, all right, I am adding to that. Because all that does is generate more of the same stuff that I am trying to avoid in the first place. But I'm doing what only the personality knows how to do. I'm pushing you out of the circle. You don't belong here. You are not worthy of love. And what you put outside of God, you give great power to, because those very things you put outside of God keep you outside of God in your experience. There's a line from a song I wrote years ago called Hold the Light. And it was all about realizing that it was called Hold the Light for Your Brothers and Your Sisters. It was all about realizing that there are times in our lives when our hearts are open and we're in touch with the truth of who we are and the strength of who we are, and we can literally hold the light for those who can't at that moment. Whether we are connected with them personally or not. Because what we realize is there are times in our lives there are times in my life anyway, when I was so embedded and so identified with darkness that I didn't think I could hold the light at all for myself, and somebody held it for me until I was able to hold it back for myself. I absolutely know that's true. You know, it might have been a Tibetan monk thousands of miles away who was holding me in the light, didn't know who I was personally, it doesn't matter. But somehow is holding me in the light until I could find that for myself. And there's a line from that song that says, you can't hold your brother in the dark and expect to see the light. So I can't hold somebody out there someplace and say, you don't belong here. Because if you don't belong here, I don't belong here. Wonderful quote from Merton. The arrow which with I shoot my enemy has to pass through my own heart first. So I put you in the dark, puts me in the dark as well. Don't like that. Don't want to even agree with it sometimes, okay? But I know that's true. Jim?
Yeah, one of the mantras that I'm working on, and this was given to me at a New Thought Church many, many years ago. And so the words, I'll say the words, but then I'm working on getting the frequency and the vibration of it. So I'll say this, so I bless myself and I accept myself. I'll say that, then I'll say I'll bless all and I accept all. And the last one is, I bless whatever situation is in front of me, and I accept that. So as I'm saying that to me, I know that what's happening is, okay, I want to make sure that I'm just not mouthing that and just actually feeling that. So that's what Jim's working on.
Thank you. Let me know when you get that finished, okay? Because I want to know the secret. Oh, I'm done. I'm done with that one now. The way, kind of to sum up some of this anyway, because I've talked a lot about the personality self, which is, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a really nice set of clothes. It's just not who you are. The way Ram Dass put it is that the moment we are born, we go into somebody training. People start telling us who we are. You're just like your mom, just like your old man, you're just like this, just like you're going to be a doctor when you grow up, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And of course, then you might learn you're a good boy or a good girl or a bad boy or a bad girl. And then you learn that there's something wrong with you because you're not measuring up to this particular thing. And I mean, there are all sorts of labels and messages that many of us, not all of us, but many of us sort of take in and identify with. They become part of this personality we create. So he said, we all go into somebody training. We all begin to learn who we think we are. The problem, one of the problems is that all the people who are telling you who you are, they don't know who they are. Okay. But for some of us anyway, we didn't have any recourse. We didn't know where else to go with that. The information came from on high, and so it must have been true. And he said, then there comes a point in our lives, if we're willing to, if we're open to this one, where we begin to realize that the somebody that we've created is not the truth of who we are. And that the truth of who we are is really nobody. He calls it becoming nobody, right? In other words, becoming who you are without all the labels stuck on you. So now, here, guess what we are? We've all been through somebody training. And now we're in nobody training. Becoming nobody. Wow. Now I still have a personality even when I'm nobody. I just realize it's just a suit of clothes. It's the way I connect with you. On planet Earth, I usually need a body and a set of vocal cords and a personality in order to be able to connect with you. And then that's probably where we first connect on some sort of personality level. And then we know ourselves beyond that too. I got on Facebook a couple of days ago, and there's a friend of mine who literally was a friend of mine in college. Actually, we went to high school together. We didn't know one another much in high school. We both joined the brothers at the same time. We both went to college together. We didn't see one another after college was over. But for 6 years in our novitiate training and our college, we shared a bond with one another. It's tremendously powerful. And as I looked at the little, whatever he was posting that particular, he usually posts something funny, he had a great sense of humor, still does. And I remember commenting or writing back to him, I said, Bill, I said, you know, it's been many, many miles and many, many years since we've even seen or talked to one another. And yet every time I look at one of your posts, and maybe hopefully anytime I send you something, you know, I said, I feel my heart opening. I said, because the friendship that we had for one another and to one another still exists within me today. And I didn't expect to get anything back. I wanted to, but I didn't. Well, almost immediately he said, I feel the same way. Because we both knew exactly what we were talking about. It was indefinable what that, the bond of that particular friendship. We couldn't put it in words, and yet both of us knew that on some level or another, we both touched one another, and because of that, we continue to be touched by one another. Way beyond the personality part of things. Do you understand this? Whatever you put outside of God, You put God outside of your experience as well. When you decide that someone is not worthy of the kingdom, you have decided that you are with them on the rock you place them on in isolation. You call yourself to that very thing you wish to not be expressed as through your judgment and through your fear. So the first thing we will do with you now is make a decision that there will be nothing outside of God, and consequently, there will be nothing outside of God's love. In 12-step recovery is something called step three. And it begins by saying, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand it. I decide that. I might not feel like it. I might not even believe or know whether that's true or not. But I'm making a decision not to do that so much. I'm making a decision to allow that to happen. See, because the doing can't be done on a personality level. When I open myself up in truth, when I open my heart up in truth, when I open myself up in truth, in love, all right, I am letting that happen. I'm not creating something. I'm not making something happen. Can you get a sense of the difference mm-hmm. between making something happen and letting it happen? One is control, and the other one is, for want of a better word, surrender. I am letting the love I am through. I am letting myself realize I am more than who I thought I was. I'm letting me realize that my connection with you is more than I, and more than my personality can create. Nothing you can imagine, nothing you have endured, nothing you have believed to be bad can be outside of God's love. Because God is all things, expressing in different ways, even in mystery. You're not expected to understand this. And as you align to this new possibility, you can move in accord with the frequency of love in a new way. No longer am I hindered by judgment. No longer am I hindered by the exceptions that I make to the rule. Well, I'm okay, but you're not. I'm not saying that disappears. My judgment's still there, and it's probably just as sharp as it always was. I just begin to realize that I don't have to listen to it a whole lot. It's there. It's going to keep doing whatever it is it's doing. I don't have to make it into the truth. I know there is a truth that goes deeper than my judgment. So do you. I know there is a truth that goes beyond my judgment. I know there is a truth that goes beyond my fear. I know there is a quietness and a stillness that goes beyond words.
Well, Jerry, can I throw something in there?
Sure.
I was doing Christmas cards late, ones from a jazz musician friend my wife didn't know their addresses, and I put it off because I didn't want to go look up all these addresses. Anyhow, I did it, and I ended up with, a half a dozen Christmas cards left over. And they all had that sprinkly stuff on, which I detest, because it's getting all over my pants and my hands. I hated it.
Humbug.
But anybody hate that too? But anyhow, I got down to a couple of them, and there's a note on my desk, a letter from a fellow who I've never met. He's a prisoner, was in the Alabama prison system for 40 years, and he got out October of last year. And his mother died while he was in prison, et cetera, et cetera. So I just decided to send him a Christmas card. And I don't remember if I signed it Love, Jamie, or not. I don't know what I said. So yesterday he emails me. Hang on just a second. I want you to read this. Oh, yeah, here it is. He says, you have surprised me with something so beautiful, a Christmas card. Thanks, man. As a matter of fact, your card is the only thing I got for Christmas, and it means so much to me, where it maybe means nothing to you. I thank you so much, my friend.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I don't think I'll ever hesitate to send a Christmas card in the future to anybody.
Good job, Jimmy.
You never know where it's coming from.
Right.
Yeah,
that's a wonderful example of the truth that you never know.
And he spent Christmas by himself because his sister is maybe on drugs or something, and there's no connection there.
Well, you not only touched his heart, you opened his heart to a truth deeper than, you know, any one of us could really explain or expand on.
You were talking about decisions, too, and I guess I made a decision a long time ago that when these prisoners wrote me for music or instruments or whatever, I decided to do it. Originally, I didn't have the time to do it, I thought. But I, you're bringing out to me that I made the decision a long time ago to spend some time with these people that I'll never meet.
We never know who we touch. The smile we give. The door we hold open. The prayer for those who still suffer, who we don't even know personally or consciously. When I say at the beginning of a talk, may all beings be at peace. It's a prayer. It's an openness to the possibility, even though I don't know how that could be possible. I believe that it is possible. Put our stuff down for a moment and take a little time to do a meditation. And just notice the silence. And what it would be like to consciously share that with all beings. And you can notice that you can be in the kingdom as well as be here consciously on planet Earth. You can have a personality with your likes and dislikes. You can have an ego, you can have a physical body. And at the same time, you can be consciously aware of this infinite divine love, peace, connection that you are a part of. So breathe in, breathe out. Know that whatever has been touched and opened with you this morning is what you take with you. And you can be reminded of this periodically during the day. If you ask your own angels and your own guides, give me a demonstration this day, or a number of demonstrations this day of my connectedness to all beings, and allow me to be awake enough to realize that. May all beings be at peace. May all beings be free of suffering. And may all beings remember who they are. Deep breath and stretch a bit. And open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all. Happy New Year. See you in a week or so. Yeah, if we could pick the chairs up and put them by the wall, it would be greatly appreciated. And we will see you soon.